Hello, Rebels. Before we kick off today's episode, let me ask you a question. What if we could help you unlock your marketing superpowers in one day or less? Actually, to be precise, I mean 3 hours. Yes, you heard it right. What I'm asking you is 3 hours of your time to join us for a brand new intensive experience, our marketing deep dive. One day masterclass that will help you create marketing strategies that capture hearts and mind. And every single masterclass is going to dive deep into one of our favorite topics of marketing. Maybe that email marketing, hiring, or even automations and beyond. If you want to get the fast track ticket to become irresistible, then I'll suggest you check out our upcoming marketing deep dive, where you're going to get 2 hours of hands-on training with lots of exercises and practical group work as well. Plus, 1 hour bonus office hours and Q&A. Oh, and we also have a personalized dashboard and bonus templates to help you apply what you learn in our 3 hours. And just to put a little bow on it, you also get a certificate of completion to show off wherever you fancy. If you'd like to find out what is coming up next and which one is our next marketing deep dive, all you have to do is go to amschool.click/masterclass. There you'll be able to find our schedule with our upcoming masterclass for you to join. On with today's show. Hi, marketing rebels. What if you could have a stunning website tailored to your unique brand, all created in mere seconds? Sounds like a dream, right? Well, with Osinger's AI website builder is actually a reality. I give it a whirl because you know me. And honestly, I was blown away. Just answer 3 simple questions and voila, your website, complete with copy and images, springs to life. And the best part? You can tweak it to perfection with a drag and drop editor. No coding, no fuss. Imagine unleashing your brand's potential with a website that's not only stunning, but also SEO friendly. Plus, with Osinger's AI tools, you can even predict visitor behavior, the closest thing to a crystal ball for your business. Ready to revolutionize your online presence? Head over to osinger.com/AMS to use the code AMS for 10% off your order and a free domain name. Your dream website is just a few clicks away. On with today's class. Hey, marketing rebels, welcome back to Alt Marketing School, the show teaching you how to make your marketing more impactful, human, and fun. It's Fab here, your marketing BFF and head teacher at Alt Marketing School. And in today's class, I'm joined by the one, the only, the fantabulous, the enabler. We'll get to that in a second. Jess Bruno. Hi, Jess. I'm starting with quizzes right now.
Oh, love.
I'm literally starting with quizzes, so I'm going to ask you a quiz. Are you all right with that?
I'm ready.
Okay. It includes stats and social media. Sexy. I like this one, though. It made me laugh when I saw this. Can you guess, you and the dear listener, which Facebook feature saw a comeback in 2024? We got 3 options. A, Facebook groups. B, Facebook pages. C, Facebook marketplace.
I feel like marketplace is always popping off, so not that one. That one's always been strong. I think groups might be the one because my sister is young and she's always in a Facebook group. And pages, I don't think it's pages, but I bet it is. Go on, you tell me.
Pages are kind of dead, so like, we can definitely take that one out. Actually, because Facebook has had overall, in general, a 4% decline year on year, including this year already, the one that has been seeing an increase after it also declined was C, Facebook Marketplaces. Also, Facebook Marketplace had a dip at the end of last year. And as per February, apparently in the US especially, which I'm not surprised, it saw a jump of 15% of visits on desktop for US users compared to, again, the decline of 4% every single year from Facebook. So, yeah, it was a bit of a trick question because some other people might be like, Marketplace is definitely going strong. But obviously, Facebook having had a decline in general for the past couple of years has seen
other features as well, obviously getting a bit of a bump down, but marketplace is coming back. And I think it kind of shows us, especially Facebook groups not being the option, why people go on Facebook these days, I think, because it's really interesting, like the flock of marketplace hunters, cabbage hunters, is kind of like, what's it called in England? It's the car boot sale. I don't know if they do also in the US. I think the online version of that is like a less glorified version of eBay.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting to see that it's coming back and it also had a decline. Do you use Marketplace? That's the question.
No, but my partner does.
What's the weirdest thing that he's got?
Oh, no, he sells a lot of his gear. So he's a musician, so he's always got like a revolving door of gear that he has to use for a show, and then he has to sell it really quickly. So like it's been very fruitful for him. He always sells stuff on Marketplace. Rather than eBay. And I think it's because of like the chat. You can easily just like, you know, it's a human, you know, they've got a Facebook and you have a conversation with them. So yeah, he uses Facebook Marketplace a lot, not as a consumer, but as a seller.
Love that. Love that. Yeah. I know some of my friends use it as a bit of both. And I think it is interesting because it's kind of bridging the gap between a more structured selling experience. Again, in whichever country you are, you definitely have seen some of the ones popping with Vinted a lot, which is international, but definitely I think it started in the UK as one of the big pushes, Depop and stuff like that. But then I found that Facebook Marketplace is interesting because, as you say, bridges the gap between more structured selling, but also more like, what can I get rid of around my house? What can I get? And then I can reclaim or can I repurpose? I see a lot of that when it comes to the design and the home side of things. It fascinates me as a little corner of Facebook because I genuinely don't think that the platform, the app, the strategy was really to invest too much into it. They probably were like, groups are still going pretty well. How can we get people to keep coming back to the platform and find something that can work for them that actually has a clear intent? And I genuinely think that was, in my opinion, a very understated play. I don't think there was a big strategy behind it, but it worked. It definitely paid off when they launched it. Marketplace conversations aside, we are having a question this week, and usually we encourage our listeners, which is you, and our students, which could also be you, to share their questions. But I've been thinking about the wonderful WhatsApp that Jess sent me, talking about what we're going to talk about next week. So I thought, actually, you can ask the question this week, Jess, and then we'll go back to, obviously, listeners' questions as they come. Which I want to remind people, you can ask questions obviously by email, but we also have a little voice messenger on the website if you want. And also on Instagram, we always do a call out or marketing school for questions for the following week. So plenty of ways to ask your questions. But today's Jess. Jess, what was the question that you asked me? What did you want to talk about? What do you want to hear our opinion on?
I've got so many things, but there's one thing in particular I want to know your thoughts on. So in the Instagram rumor mill, keeps popping up for me that if you had a personal page and you converted it into a business page, like say it was like you were just there for your friends and family and then you started a business or you started being like an influencer and you've noticed really slow growth, it's because Instagram prioritizes new accounts. And because your account is maybe 10 years old or 15 years old, it won't push you to the algorithm. Now, I'm always like, I call bullshit on everything I hear. And I'm like, the algorithm doesn't give a shit about you. But I keep seeing this one pop up and it's so compelling. It makes me want to start again. So I want to know what you think about it.
What I love about this question is actually does a massive throwback to what you talked about and you introduced us to the idea of going from personal to business account probably a month or so back. So I might repeat some of my thoughts from that conversation, but the listener is going to have maybe a fresh perspective to that because my stance is still the same. At the time, what I mentioned when we talked about old versus new, changing from personal to business, should we do it? Does it change anything? To me, my stance is what are the pros and cons? Sadly, right now, my brain, having done 15 years of marketing, is forever tied to SWOT analysis, which is strength, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. Because I do so many strategies, that's pretty much what we build a lot of the foundations on. So even for some of these bigger decisions, because let's be honest, starting afresh, it ain't just a walk in the park, especially if you want to do it strategically. And also if you have other things to do. So always look at it from a bit of a rational perspective. And while the shiny object syndrome is literally leaping out of my body and be like, this will be amazing. This could be a great experiment. I want to see what happens. But for me, the cons, 90% of the time outweigh the pros. There is one thing I want to say, and I think that's my question back to you, my reflection back to you about seeing this conversation happen a lot. I find that if you are an Instagram coach or an Instagram consultant, or Instagram is the main thing that you sell and offer, and you know how to make money on Instagram, etc., I would understand why, one, you want to talk about it. Two, you actually give a lot of weight on this when it comes to your strategy. Three, it's something that everybody else in your circle would also talk about, because let's be honest, we don't follow just our followers or the people that are on their client. Mainly we follow our peers. Am I right? So in that case, maybe the pros outweigh the cons, but in so many scenarios, unless you're fully rebranding, and again, don't make maybe my mistake where we rebranded and we kept the account. We've done it now. It's been 3 years already. But unless you are fully rebranding and you're actually shifting a lot, for a lot of us, my question is it really worth it? Your time, your energy, everything, is it really worth it? Because something that my mentor said, and then I'll throw the ball back at you, which I wrote down now, I don't have it on me, but it was something along the lines of focus brings results, and I've become a bit of my mantra for the rest of the year. So doing less, focusing more, you know, focusing on one audience, focusing on one message, on one product. So that's literally been ingrained in me in the last couple of weeks. So to me, this goes very much against the idea of focus brings results, because even just the shift in the transition, people don't understand how much weight you put into it. Caveat, you're an Instagram coach. Instagram is your main business. Instagram is your main product. Maybe you don't have a lot of other marketing channels. Maybe you have extra support. The pros might outweigh the cons. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. That's how I see it.
I love that so much. I'm going to read to you like one of these, without saying the names, like the advice this generic Instagram coach is saying and making it really matter of fact. So they say, how long have you had your account for? Have you ever switched niche? If you have ever switched niche or changed a personal account to a business account, you need to start afresh, is what this person's saying. And they're saying, basically, if you don't do that, it's going to take you a really long time to convert your followers. And I just think it's a load of baloney, but it's so shiny and it sounds like, of course that's the reason why. Of course it is. And I will always kind of get pulled into this. And then I have to put my rational hat on and be like, nah, I've seen so many people start new accounts and they don't go anywhere. And it's never because they're not trying hard enough. It's probably because the content isn't good enough. And that's always the problem. The content isn't good enough. And there has to be people like, but the only thing I don't have a solid bit of data on is someone who is perhaps in my position, who switched a personal account that she just used for boys on Tinder into a business account, and if that has ever hindered someone's growth on that platform. Because I don't know. And that's what's making my heart is like, it's bullshit. And these Instagram gurus are out here to trick you and they want to feed you all the shiny glitter food.
There's something that you read at the beginning, which I also know that you stressed upon, because there was the break and there was you going, just that you need to do this. That to me is, it rings so many alarm bells to me. Let me explain why.
Right?
Yeah. This is a visual medium, but Jessie was literally waving her hand beautifully. That's kind of the vibe. I was saying yesterday and to our students for our certification, right? So we're doing our cohort at the moment. So every week I talk to them. And yesterday I was saying to my students, we're talking about audience personas. So maybe that helps, but I just want to do a little aside here. And I said to them, every so often I go off on a mini TED Talk and I warn them. I said, there is reason within me saying this, but I just want to say that you chose us because of the marketing to hearts, because of making marketing less easy, because of making marketing feel better for everybody. So what I said to them, we're talking about objections, which I have a little nugget at the end of this episode to talk about. But talking about objections, and I said to them, our philosophy, which I want to introduce to you, and then you can take it or leave it as a student. You take the knowledge as you want. But great marketing is not persuasion, it's direction. All right?
Whee!
That's one of my quotables.
I love that.
Because we all hear like, you know, marketing and sales is all about persuasion. Great marketing is not about persuasion, it's about direction. It's about getting the right people to you and creating content, messaging, campaigns that inspire people to make a choice on whether you're the right fit for them or not. Because let's be honest, people that are not the right fit, people that are not your people, you can't serve them well. You potentially can't serve them at all. And it's not going to lead to the best experience for anybody. So I was saying this, and it goes back to the point that we just made here with that you need to do this. Because I genuinely believe that great marketing is about the unsexy. I always say this. Dear listener, I'm sorry, I'm going to repeat myself. The unsexy middle ground, the gray area. Not the black or white, there can be some blacks or white, but a lot of what you also mentioned with you thinking about what do I know because I don't have the data to tell me whether this works or not. There's a lot of gray areas here. And there is a lot of giving your followers, your audience, your students, the data or the knowledge that make an informed decision. So when somebody already starts and says, you need to do this, I'm like, nah, I don't. I'll choose whether I need to by hearing what you have to say and trying it for myself or again, my SWOT analysis in my head. So that's the first thing I just want to say. I just want to put out there from that message that turned me off because of how I approach marketing in general. And now I also know that our students and hopefully most of our listeners approach marketing, which is in a way that rooted in data, rooted in facts, but also that makes them feel good and then makes their audience feel good. Another note I want to make, which is what you said, I want to reiterate that. A new account cannot save terrible content or a terrible strategy. A new account can't do that. Or the lack of strategy, even worse.
I love that so much. You need to that needs to be a post you do, like today. You need to quote that.
I'll need to re-listen to this because I say these things now. Like, what did I just say? But it's true. A new account can't save the lack of strategy or a terrible content strategy. You need to focus. I would rather you focus more on that, which is like what you talk about a lot, building relationships as well, understanding the journey, than focusing on starting from scratch, starting afresh. You know, I actually have a question for you about this, you know, thinking about this process as well, which is why do you go back to the content of people? I'm going to say business people because obviously we might have friends and stuff that just want to see what they're up to. But why do you go back to the content of some of the people that always appear at the top of your stories that are not maybe your close friends? Think about it. What's about them then gets you to get back to them, if any of them exist?
I don't know. What do you think? I don't know.
Or I'll give you my example, maybe helps with you and your listener. Think about it as well. So obviously friends checking out what they're up to and powwowing and cheerleading them. Yeah. There's a couple of people that I really like their message, what they do. I really like to see their journey. So I always check their stories anyway because it's the quickest gateway, which means then obviously, because once again, I don't believe in blank statements, they usually repost some of their posts in their stories and everybody tells you not to do that, but they do that. It helps me as a user. It helps me because then I know, oh, I'm going to check this thing out. And then I consume their content. So I feed my algorithm in a way that I say, actually, I like these people because I get something out of their content. So I'm going to continue engaging with them. And stories for me is the easiest way to do that to start so that I can see their content on my feed, but also I can get myself a quick way to access their content. That's how I think as a human.
Sure.
I genuinely don't think I'm going to go and scroll my feed for 6 hours because I'm busy, because I, even when I scroll my feed, obviously you get the first 10 posts and then you kind of get lost. So I get the algorithm to help me by actually choosing the people that I want to hear from and be more discerning about who they are. So it's less about what the algorithm is feeding me all the time. It's more about me actually making sure that I go back to them. Am I making sense? Because that's yeah. To me, the missing piece is like, it doesn't account for that, this post or this conversation. It doesn't account for why people would come back to your content in the first place, why people would want to see what's up next. It's that storytelling piece, right?
Uh-huh.
Following the journey. Like, I am obsessed. Actually, I need to tell us a bit more about this series because I'm obsessed and I talked about it maybe another pod, but I'm obsessed with your little mean girl.
Bebe!
I'm obsessed with those.
Oh my God, I love her.
So I wouldn't want to go back and watch the next one. You know what I mean?
Bebe. Bebe is my babe. She's called Boss Babe 3000 is her name. But Bebe for short. I love her. I love her so much. Thank you for saying that.
But you know, this is a thing that you did, a thing that you tried. I can see that I'm not the only one that loves her because there's lots of comments of people that absolutely love it. maybe it's a bit polarizing, which definitely helps, you know, but, you know, obviously. But that's the thing. It's something that is yours, that is uniquely yours, that people enjoy and they like that. You know that they like that. You keep doing it again. Even if they maybe don't go and check every single new post that you do, they're like, oh, actually, I want to see if Jess has been doing another of these lives or these BB videos or stuff like that. You know, these are the people that I honestly go back to myself. I kind of know what to expect and I like what they do. And I think that's one thing that we forget about. But yeah, how was BB born? Just to give some more context, because we know who she is. But
BB. BB was born because I saw someone on TikTok use this filter and be portraying like a mean fitness guru. And I was like, number one, I need to find this filter. Number two, I want to try this. I want a monkey see a monkey do it for me. And then BB was born. And I just started saying, there's one person in particular who I think about when I channel her, who kind of does give this kind of boss babe hustle, work really hard, you're not working hard enough, it's really easy, what's wrong with you vibe. And I kind of want to, again, like BB would 100% say you need to change. You need to make a new account. She loves that shit. She would, that's her vibe. And I think people retrospectively view it and realize that I'm not that. And it's just so fun. I want to have so much fun with my content. That's my whole thing this year, is I want to have so much fun with it. And now that we're here, I'm thinking about the next BB installment might be like a daily vlog. That'd be quite fun.
Please. I absolutely love when they do the flip reverse of those. I need to remember, I'm not going to say his name right. And I'm going to actually have to kind of put it, I'm going to put it in the show notes. But I think it's Munia, and he's the guy who does a lot of the satirical political satires. You know who he is? I don't know if you know who he is. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm sure if you send me him, I'll be like, oh yeah.
So I'll put it in the show notes, because again, his name I now can't remember exactly. So yeah, it is Munia, his first name. And he says like erotic eyebrow owner. It's the guy with the big eyebrows, and he does the Nigella. It does the Nigella satire as well. But he also did a couple of satires of different characters that come back and like vlogs and stuff. So I love those. I would say go for that.
Amazing. I'm going to do a vlog. I'm going to go like get a Joe and the Juice, and I'm going to talk about how I'm doing. I'm only working for 1 hour today, and I do a 4-hour work week, and I make so much money. Like, I'm going to be that bitch.
And I think that's the thing. It's like, going back to what you said here about making content fun, I would rather the dear listener take out of this conversation, think about what's lacking in your content and then reverse engineer that. And a lot of the time, talking about my personal journey with the Grammar Room, I got back to do, I did a batch of 15 videos in one go. And the first video is like, I'm back. I literally acknowledge it, I'm back. I've been not wanting to show up because I didn't have any. I felt like I had things to say, but I kind of didn't know how to say them, or I didn't have the energy. I was like, I'm back. And I'm actually going to do it in the way that works for me, which is talking head. Sorry, everybody. As you can tell, I like to talk. And I just got 15 videos out of it because there are so many things that I'm interested about that I want to talk about. And I thought, okay, which ones are serving and giving value? Which ones can be something that people can take away quickly? Recording them, done them. It's so much fun. And we're getting great editing because we're finding a system, and they look really good and they feel really good and they're easy for me to create. And yes, maybe I should do carousels. Yes, maybe I should do more trending reels. But it's not encouraging me to show up. And what I said in the first video, what I explained my process, if you are a personal brand especially, I appreciate that not everybody can do that. But if you're a small business owner, if you are the decision maker, if you are a personal brand, if you are talking about yourself, I think we forget about the fun piece. And it doesn't necessarily, again, save a strategy if there's a lack of strategy. But I think without the fun can help either bring in perspective to the strategy or add something, add a flair. But also I think people are craving that personal touch and the personal experience. Last week, we talked about LinkedIn doing vertical video feed on the app. All the social platforms are looking for more of that. And if you are a great presence on video, capitalize on it. You're great on video. Why not capitalize on it, right?
And there we go. I know we need to go into proper things, but I have two things I want to ask you about.
What is the proper things? This is a flow. This is honestly, they're a flow. So let's go with the flow. Okay. What you want to ask? What you want to ask? What you want to ask?
Number one, because you said LinkedIn, how annoying is the new network section and you're getting notifications, not just about connections, but like this person just did this. Are you getting that?
You know why it is? I am getting that is because I think this is a UX thing. This is a user experience. LinkedIn, there were fewer notifications because fewer people were active. Now that everybody's active, you're getting a lot of notifications. And the notifications are so wild right now. You get anything from you're posting, and I'm like, excellent, thank you for telling me that, to this is a piece of news. Like, great. So I think because of that, there's two folds, putting the skeptic hat on here. Fold one is just to tidy up the notification feed a bit. So you can actually get next to the invitations in your network, you can get the extra tab that looks like somebody has asked, did you connect? But actually says, this person is a birthday, or this person started a new job. But also I wonder whether there is a prompt from LinkedIn to get people to engage more with their own network in like celebrations and stuff like that. Because once again, everybody's a lot more active. And I'm not hating it, but I'm not loving it. I was hella confused because nobody told me that was going to happen. So LinkedIn, please. And then I saw lots of notifications on my connections, which I usually have, like quite a lot of invites. But then I was like, there's no invites though. Why are you telling me 10 things happened? So I think that's it. That's working.
That's what I'm saying. It teased me.
I think it wants you to interact with people for that specific reason. It wants you to kind of engage with them that way. And also probably to clean up a tiny bit the feed. Like, I love the fact that also LinkedIn now is pushing again for the 15th time the Top Voices badge.
No, they love that badge. Wait, they love that badge.
What?
No, but people that I think it's nice to have. I think when you get it, it's exciting for you. But I'm like, LinkedIn, you're a huge, huge business. You can do more for these top voices than just give them a badge. Like, actually post them. If they're a top voice for you, LinkedIn, share their page on to your network. Like, come on, mate. Don't make it this big shiny thing when it isn't.
It is basically a user retention / gamification like tool, when actually, as you say, it could be more of a network enhancement sort of kind of influencer kind of,
yes,
not even tactic but strategy, which I agree. I think it would be so much better because it also spotlights some top voices. They talk about neurodivergence, diversity, and it means that it can be exposed to maybe networks that are not like ours that would have a wider variety of voices and experiences in their feed. Because that's the other thing is, don't get me wrong, yay, top voice in marketing. Love
yay.
That. But it's nice to also be able to see if I want to learn more about and understand the professional standpoint and challenges of somebody with neurodivergence. It's good for us to be able to look for it, but LinkedIn does have that pool of information to help us out, spotlight that. So I agree with you. It would be nice to have a bit more of that.
What do LinkedIn say they are? They say they're a networking. What's their tagline? Do you know?
We have it in one of our certification. I'm going to try and pull it out. Certification decks for the first session that we do. So spoiler alert. That's one thing we talk about, my position statements as part of the thing. So let me try and find everybody, but I might get lost into the updates. No, I got it. So I can read one of the most updated ones anyway. It says, everybody, this is LinkedIn. Where is she? So what they say is their mission is to connect the world's professional to make them more productive and successful by creating economic opportunity for any member in the global workforce. So they actually say that they are a network, not a networking site that provides support for the global workforce. So it's interesting. They actually position themselves a bit differently, but to me, they are still more like a social networking. Like, they position more on the kind of job hunting and the connections, but they're not Pinterest. Pinterest, they say they're a social engine. I'll take that because they are.
They are.
You know, that's what I'll say. So that was point one. Love it. We got a bit heated at LinkedIn. What was the other question you had?
Okay, it's left. So like, if you want to not talk about it today, that's fine. Or we can like split this episode or talk about it next time. But I really want to ask you about the podcast, like the behind the scenes of the podcast.
when you left with the podcast, I was like, magical world of opportunities. We can definitely do, I think it might deserve its own dedicated set of questions. And maybe we can open it also to the listener.
Hi.
Next time Jess is back, we're going to have a lot of questions about the podcast behind the scenes. We talk about it occasionally, but more than happy to do it more in depth. I would say it can be its own thing, because I think then we can cover different things you have as a question.
I agree. I've got so many questions. I'm so excited to hear about it.
My question back to you is, how is it also going to inform what you're going to do with your podcast? Because I know that your podcast has had a couple of iterations. So I'm kind of wondering whether it's just curiosity. Oh, I've just been honest. I think also that the people also know what you're up to.
So, yes. Yeah, I mean, I really want to do long form content. That's something I want to inject in. I'm thinking about the way I want to actually commit to it, because I do so much already and it's a time investment, but I want to do long form content. And I think me sitting and speaking will be a good journey. I really enjoy the positioning I've got in it now, where I'm taking it. I'm solid on that. But I'm thinking about like how much I should invest in it. If I want to do it properly, I've got so many questions around it. So I was really intrigued to know your journey on it.
Well, I'll say that so that we can tease, obviously keep on listening to all the episodes, but when Jess is back, what we can definitely focus on that can be useful for the dear listener as well as much as yourself is we can cover the different areas from the only background knowledge that I'm going to give us right now, which is that last year and the beginning of this year, now a bit less so, now we're kind of finding our feet. But I would say between the end of last year and first quarter of 2024, I tried a lot of things, a lot. We've tried a lot of things. And now I'm going back from experimentation phase to kind of figuring out what works. The only upper hand that I have is that I've done 5 podcasts in some varieties before. Oh, this is the 5th, I would say. So I've done 4 podcasts before, one in 2015, when I used my ex-boyfriend's gear, because he was a music journalist himself. So that's how old it was. Like, no way to enhance the audio using Audacity. I did it all myself. So I've learned a lot and I really love the medium. And I also want to say that for anybody, I find that if you really want to work on the podcast side of things, you need to appreciate that the return on investment can be so variable. You can make it whatever you want, but also it can be quick, fast, it can be slow burn. You genuinely sometimes don't know, even if you think you know, based on what you think the strategy is. But more than happy to talk about it, because I think it's good to bring some realism about the level of everything that we have had to achieve and how we got there. So yeah, team, watch out for that one next time. I'm going to close us off then talking about objections again, if that's all right.
Please.
And don't forget to leave all of the questions. Again, go on Instagram, check our stories. We do every single week a story with questions and we'll make sure that it's clear there for the podcast one. We're going to make sure that it's clear for that. Or also you can respond to our emails when we send our podcast emails as well. So keep sending your questions. We want to really tailor this behind the scenes episode to you. The final thing I want to talk about, because we talked about objections earlier on actually, was one thing that I share with our students, again in the cohort. Shout out to our apprentices, you're amazing. We're almost halfway through. By the time this goes out, we are going to be 4 weeks in. And we talked about audiences, as I mentioned. And one of the most interesting things that I found as something that we tried ourselves when it comes to tying into our audience, understanding our audience and talking to them is something called an objection smasher. It's like, this can be a post or a page on your website and smash. But what I like about it as a concept, this comes actually from Dave Gerhardt, just Gerhardt, just to kind of give the LinkedIn name if you want to check him out. It was a post that he did ages ago and I just saved it and I love it because it talks about actually taking the objections and hopefully the first step will be formulating them. So make sure that you actually know what the objections are and what you would answer as. But there are 3 options that you could try for yourself on an objection smasher. What he recommends is to do literally a landing page on your website that has all the objections that people have. It's almost like an FAQ. It can be a part of an FAQ, but I think it's nice when you give it a bit more of a spicy name. And there are the other things that you can do. So you can create a whole page for this. You can create obviously a section in a landing page as well, but also you can use it as a dynamic page where you can have all the objections and even use it as a way to get customer feedback or audience's feedback about some of the things they want to improve. You can also use it as a blog post if you wanted to, or like a piece of content, even like a podcast. And you can use it as a way to prime people to your next launch or your next product. And actually, one that I kind of like as well is that you can use this as a way to do a comparison page, which is very common for SaaS tools and softwares. And it kind of works because one is good for SEO, because when people are looking for example, Calendly, you can have the best Calendly alternative, and then you can see the options and who you are. But also it's really good to do these comparison tables or pages, looking at some of the objections, some of the things that stop people from buying from you. So I kind of really like it because I'm a big advocate for understanding objections and voicing them and answering them before we have to answer them, if possible. I know that it's not for everybody, but I generally find that it builds trust for us. So I wanted to ask you, how do you deal with understanding what the objections that your audience might have are and how to actually include them in your strategy?
In the small business world, objection handling is huge. It happens all the time, whether you're product-based or service-based. There's always kind of three main objections that come up. It's too expensive. I don't have time for this right now. I don't see how this will make my life better. And so what you need to do on the back end is use pre-qualifying content to make sure you're hitting these pain points. And if you're service-based and you don't want time wasters on your sales calls, I would have objection handling, like qualifying questions as they apply. So it's this much money. Does that make sense for you? You have to be this, this, and this. Does that make sense for you? And that can really, really help. So in a sales flow, I will always do an objection handling email as well. Always. I'll do FAQs. I do them all the time. And it's good to have, so I'm in a launch right now for a group program, and I've got a note on my phone called objection handling where someone tells me it's too expensive, I haven't got time, or I don't see how this will make sense for me. And so obviously I'll make it make sense for each person, but I can have like this thing in my notes where I can copy and paste my replies to them.
We're two people in one brain. I literally have the same, and I told our students yesterday, and a couple of them, I know they love the databases like myself. I could see they were like, yay. And I told them, we have a simple table in Notion, like simple database, and just has what you just said. I make it even more specific, to be honest, for us, because some of the stuff when it's complex, it's like, maybe it is, I don't have money, but it's more like, you know, how can I justify the investment? So sometimes these objections, we kind of make them a bit more specific, but also I like to copy the exact questions sometimes that people ask, because they might be slightly different, and it really helps me then finding the perfect answer for them. But I love that. I'm big on having a quick link to find them and then being able to use them also as ARC. So thank you for reiterating that, because I know that we feel, well, if we don't talk about it, it goes away. Nobody's going to ask the question, but actually they're just going to ask it to themselves internally. They're just going to think about it. And they're not going to maybe feel safe enough, or it's not going to be clear enough for them to ask the question. One more thing I'm going to mention in this is one of the things that we do that I got from when we were working with Maven for our certification. You can also send a very simple email, similar to what you just talked about for the sales flow, that says, you know, you didn't join my program, let's say this time. Was it for reason one? Again, I don't have time. Two, I don't have money. Two, whatever. And literally as a 1, 2, 3, I say, just reply, if you can, reply to this email with the one that is most relevant to you. And actually gives you a bit of a better idea, because it's very low friction for people. And it's after it's happened. So they're like, okay, this time might not be, you know, the right one for me. But it also allows them to give you a bit of feedback, and you can start seeing what are some of the objections that maybe are not handled well enough for you. So that's another little tip I wanted to share. Talked about so many things. We even foreshadowed something we're going to talk about again. Now, everybody's going to want to go and watch Bibi. I'm going to try and find the actual video and put it in the show notes.
Bibi! One of
the
ones.
She's got vibes. She's got vibes.
She really does.
Jess, before we bring the vibes in and out, where can people find out more about you? Where can they find out more about the upcoming program as well?
Well, the program is called Watch Us Grow, and I'm so excited to be running it. It starts on May 7th. So if you're listening to this past that date, the doors are closed. But there's going to be a group of 10 people in this 90-day program where we're going to build a made-to-last content strategy for your small business. And I'm so excited. It's a program that I've run 3 times now, but usually it's a 6-month kind of commitment. But I've squeezed it all into 90 days because who the fuck wants to work in August? Like, no one.
You say that. That's kind of why we're doing our summer school. It's kind of training out in August and we can take a break. So very true, very true. Check out the show notes. You can find out where you can find out more about Jess. All the links are always there. So go and check it out. And obviously sign up and join. It's going to be fun. You know where to find us, dear listener. I don't need to tell you that. But I need to remind you to be kind to yourself and others. And the great marketing speaks to hearts, in case you didn't notice today. Not just minds. Lovely to have you today. Until next time. Class is dismissed.